On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Dr. Megan Lincoln, who heads the Parametric Natural Catastrophe Team in the Americas for Swiss Re Corporate Solutions. She's one of Swiss Re's experts on climate change science, natural catastrophes, and the innovative insurance solutions to address them. Welcome, Megan.
Hi, Peter. Thank you for having me.
Yes. And I saw that you did your undergrad at Rutgers University. I'm assuming you graduated after me, considerably later than me. Are you from Jersey originally or no?
I am. I grew up in central New Jersey, actually about 20 minutes from Rutgers. And now I live up in northern New Jersey, but have spent almost all of my life here, minus the 4 years I was at the University of Maryland for grad school. Okay. And I guess the 8 years I lived in New York City proper.
Okay. So what town, I'm asking for a friend, were you raised in?
I grew up in Edison.
Okay. Yeah, Edison. Well, I grew up in Milltown. And I lived Freehold.
Yeah.
And Edison, and then we lived in Metuchen. Metuchen's like the donut hole of Edison.
Yep. That's how I say Metuchen is Edison's downtown, because Edison doesn't really have a downtown.
Doesn't have a downtown, yeah. I love that area. I try to get it back. All my family's still up there, so it's great. Now, where in northern Jersey are you now?
We're up in Bergen County in Ridgewood.
Oh, okay. That's beautiful. Okay. All right. Well, so... I love this topic of climate. I'm fascinated with it myself. I didn't do all the schooling you did. But like you, I guess, I've always been interested in Mother Nature. And down here in Florida, we're always tracking the storms, you know, the big storms. But it seems like you were always, this was like a thing for you in school too, like early in school, like a passion for the weather. Is that correct?
Yeah. So, like I mentioned, I grew up in New Jersey and I grew up in central New Jersey, but my family has always had a home on the Jersey Shore. First, my grandparents had one, and then my parents bought us on the same street as them. We are near La Valette, so in between Point Pleasant and Seaside Heights. So always was observing nor'easters and hurricanes. One of my earliest memories is Hurricane Gloria. As it came up the coast. And then in 1992, when Hurricane Andrew hit Florida, I could just not stop watching the Weather Channel. I was just fascinated by it as somebody who, again, spent so much time and still to this day spends every summer on the ocean. It was just utterly fascinating to me. So I decided that I wanted to study meteorology, and I did so. I graduated from Rutgers with my bachelor's in meteorology, and then I got my master's and PhD in atmospheric science from the University of Maryland.
So what is it about the weather? Why? Why do you think? I know we got a lot to talk about with parametric and so forth and things you're doing now, but why do you think it is? Is it just like that was your thing?
I think because there's nothing that you can really do to stop it.
Yeah.
You know, we've improved our forecasting capabilities tremendously. We've improved our ability to observe storms tremendously. But at the end of the day, the atmosphere is going to do and the ocean is going to do what they're going to do. And there's little that we can do to change a hurricane landfall or to change the impact of a nor'easter. We have to live with them and prepare for them and monitor them the best we can.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're trapped in a seat in a theater watching like a horror movie you can't escape, you know.
Yep.
Okay, so tell us how you got to where you're at today. Like, tell us a little bit more about your career.
So I was preparing to graduate from the University of Maryland and had decided that I was not originally when I went to grad school to pursue my higher degrees, I had wanted to go and become a college professor. And then when I got into graduate school and I saw a little bit more about what the academic lifestyle entailed, I decided that wasn't really for me. I didn't really want to potentially move around all that much. I didn't necessarily want to be constantly writing grant proposals and publishing papers. The thing that aspect that I enjoyed about being a professor was teaching. And I learned as I was in graduate school that to become a tenure track professor, a lot of the focus is going to be, or to become a tenured professor, a lot of the focus is going to be on research. And again, I didn't really want to be moving all over the place. I was living on the border of DC and Maryland at the time. So I figured I would either stay in the DC area and go into public policy, or I would move back to the New York area and I would look at going into finance because I had heard about weather derivatives. I had heard about those sorts of financial instruments. So I thought New York finance, DC policy. And as I was approaching graduation and my dissertation defense, I just put my resume up on a bunch of job websites and was contacted by a headhunter who was looking for somebody to join the Swiss Re Cat Perils team in Armonk, New York. The Cat Perils team is Swiss Re's research and development arm on natural catastrophes. So developing the cat models that are used internally to assess hurricane, severe convective storm, earthquake, flood, et cetera, risk. And they were looking for somebody who had a background in atmospheric or related science, and I fit the bill. So I went and interviewed and got the job and started working with Swiss Re and have minus 1 year of my career where I was at Allianz doing weather derivative underwriting, have been with Swiss Re ever since.
Okay. So like that job board today is a whole different thing. People complain about it constantly, you know. When I got my first job in insurance at AM Best, it was a newspaper ad. So that shows you. And they worked, you know, you sent a letter in.
Yeah.
Or you called maybe. But maybe that most of the people I know are in kind of branding and marketing roles and it's pretty competitive. Maybe you were in a very niche-y area and needed there. But it's so hard to do that now with the way LinkedIn works and with AI to get a good job or to find a job.
I mean, I haven't, you know, I'm lucky where I've managed to have a very good career at Swiss Re. So
yeah.
I fortunately have not had to job hunt in a while.
Yeah, it's a company that does a great job with research for the reports on all kinds of topics, and definitely with weather. So parametric insurance, can you explain like in simple terms? I know most of our listeners have heard of it. Some of them probably are very involved in it and selling it even. But I always like to ask that because we throw around a lot of jargon in our industry. And so maybe you can just explain it in simple terms. And also, what are some of the key benefits of it? Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, sure. So parametric insurance, rather than settling on the actual incurred loss in the aftermath of a natural disaster, settles on the intensity of the underlying event that caused the loss. So it will settle on earthquake shaking or ground shaking caused by an earthquake at the insured's locations, the wind speed caused by a hurricane at the insured's locations, the hail size that falls at the insured locations, the intensity of a tornado as it tracks through the insured's locations. So, and the benefits of these sorts of insurance, natural catastrophe insurance policies is really threefold. Number one, it's very transparent as to how the claim is being settled. You know in the policy what intensity needs to be met or exceeded for either a partial or full payout to be given. Number two, the claim settlement is very quick. We have settled just over a dozen claims since 2020 in North America, and we've settled all of them within 30 days. So you really do get the funds when you need them the most, which is in the immediate aftermath of the event. Most recently, we settled a claim on Hurricane Melissa in 2025 in Jamaica, and we paid our claims in 3 days. So we always say these insurance policies settle quickly, and they really do. Like, we actually now have proof of concept. And the third reason that insured CDs is valuable is the funds are very flexible. Again, we do these as insurance policies, so you have to incur a loss, but the range of losses that the funds can cover are large. You don't have to use them to cover your property damage. You can use it to cover business interruption. You can use it to cover your deductible. You could use it to recover lost operational costs. You can use it to recover additional investments that you make in the aftermath of an event to help yourself recover more quickly. So a very wide range of use of these funds is allowed. And that's why clients like them, because it's going to cover what their traditional insurance program does not. So we always say these really with traditional insurance, parametric insurance really work hand in hand and are two very important tools when you're looking at a holistic risk management strategy for natural catastrophes.
Okay. So who are the people buying these policies or not? Are they policies? Are they called policies?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, they're insurance policies. So we have a range of customers. The ones that they resonated first with were the public sector, because the public sector is the insurer of last resort and the first responder. And prior to moving over to the corporate solutions arm of Swiss Re, I spent 7 years with our public sector team. So they were the ones who it resonated with first, because in the aftermath of a natural disaster, there's going to be all sorts of financial items that they're going to have to address. So, and then in the aftermath of Harvey, Irma, and Maria and the Mexican earthquakes in 2007, we saw an increase in interest from commercial clients. And now I would say they resonate with a lot of different customers. They resonate with the hospitality industry. They resonate with retailers. They resonate with construction projects, manufacturers, you name it. And almost every industry can find a use case for it and can see how these parametric insurance products can be valuable.
Is it like generally affordable? Like I've heard farmers too are, you know, buyers of this too. How does it maybe it has grown more. Maybe, have you seen, is it niche, still a niche thing or?
No, it's no longer really a niche. I would say that it's really grown as an accepted type of parametric natural catastrophe insurance. Okay. Again, you know, Swiss Re has a team dedicated to it. We know other carriers have teams dedicated to this topic. So it's really no longer a niche product that's being used to address very specific needs by very specific industry sectors, but rather an accepted insurance product that's going to allow a range of customers to get protection for that which they might not be otherwise protected for under their other insurance policies.
Right. So working in tandem with regular insurance, they can play with things like their retentions and things that are covered, not covered, you know, business interruption, the parametric might cover that, or keeping people on the payroll, that sort of thing, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. You said, by the way, you say niche, I say niche, but that's okay.
Potato, potato.
Yeah. So how has it grown in terms of what it can cover and also like the risk management components of it, the parametric?
So I just think that it's grown in, again, where more industries see a use case for it. And I would say, you know, a lot of initial inquiries are around deductible buy downs or deductible infills, since they're thinking about it in a property context, and hurricanes, earthquakes, floods, tornado, hail tend to cause property damage. But when you actually get into the discussions with the insureds, when you get into discussions with the brokers, and it's worth noting many brokers have alternative risk transfer teams that also focus on this topic. So there's a level of sophistication in the industry now between the carriers and the brokers who offer this product that was not present 15 years ago. But as you get to talk to the clients and you explain, here's where parametric insurance might fit in for other costs, you see them go, oh, okay, yeah, that's okay. I can see it now.
Do you think, I'm just speculating, I certainly don't mean to lead the witness here, but do you feel like, especially with catastrophes, but in all kinds of, and catastrophes now are just all over the place. They used to just be sort of a coastal problem, but they're all over the place now, certainly with the wind, and, you know, rain, hail, fires, earthquakes. It just feels like the world's ending sometimes. But you also get the sense that traditional insurance sort of is trading dollars with people, you know, it doesn't seem to always make the most sense. Like affordability is an issue in a lot of places. Availability is an issue. How do you see that? You think parametric will always sort of live in tandem Or will there be a world where this traditional insurance policy changes dramatically?
So I have not worked on the traditional side in a really long time. So I can't really comment on market dynamics. I can't really comment about it. You know, it's not an area that I've worked on. So it's not an area that I feel I'm best suited to address. But again, parametric insurance can really be used to cover the things that your traditional property policy does not. Mm-hmm. And it can... the claims payment being so soon after the event, it really can allow you to kickstart your recovery efforts. Mm-hmm. There have been numerous studies done by various, I guess we could call them NGOs, that have shown that the sooner funds are injected into a community after a natural disaster, or the sooner anyone affected by a natural disaster gets money, the less the knock-on economic effects of the natural disaster are. And that's where we feel as though, you know, parametric insurance being paying out so quickly can be leveraged by so many different potential customers mm-hmm. or existing customers.
Yeah. So you feel like more people should have it? More businesses and communities?
I feel as though businesses and community and public entities should definitely be investigating this as another tool in their risk management toolbox when they're preparing for natural disasters. Yes.
Okay. Are there requirements like with a regular policy for things like loss control or risk management, you know, for the payouts to happen, or is that different? That's unique to traditional insurance.
So the requirement on the parametric policy side, at least how we at Swiss Re manage them, is we give our customers a year to confirm their loss and to confirm that they did not incur less loss than proceeds they received under the parametric policy. So those are the requirement. About 95% of what we do is executed in insurance form. We do a few in derivative form, but most of what we do is in insurance form. So the clients do have to confirm the loss, but it's a very straightforward process. And we do give them this runway, knowing that there's the losses might not always happen immediately afterwards. It could be that they reveal themselves further down the line. You're closed longer than expected. It takes you longer to procure materials or some sort of important component, and the knock-on economic effects take 3 to 6 months to reveal themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you mentioned earlier about the weather. We can't do anything about it. I just read a piece, and maybe you know something about this, where in China they're able to influence local weather, like make it rain the day before a big festival in Beijing, so that the festival day is clear. Does that sound at all familiar? And do you think
it's possible? I know nothing about this.
Yeah.
I remember being in undergrad and discussing cloud seeding, which is mm-hmm. where you spray, I think it's silver iodine into clouds to try to get the droplets to become smaller so it doesn't rain. But again, that was decades ago. So I am not in the arena of weather modification. So cannot intelligently comment on it.
Yeah, I wonder if we're able at some point to really control these big storms somehow, or steer them away. Or it's kind of like what happened last. So my house got flooded in 2004 with Hurricane Helene down here in St. Pete, Florida.
Okay.
And so, you know, it's sort of like the risk and reward of living on the coast, of course, right? Jersey Shore has certainly seen its share of things.
Yep, I know it all too well with Hurricane Sandy.
Yeah. So you're kind of waiting. You're kind of, okay, what's this year going to be like? Tomorrow I'm going to a little local session with the independent agents of Pinellas County. We're going to hear from some weather guy who's going to talk about what this year looks like down here, what they're predicting. Last year, there were all these storms in the Atlantic, but they just kind of steered away. Mm-hmm. Oh, and I'm like, I wonder, like, is that AI that did that?
It was the weather patterns that
right
made it favorable for the storms to stay out to sea.
Right. I know. I shouldn't challenge your professorhood, but I feel like it's so, these storms are so bad that down the road, and maybe it will be superhuman intelligence, can just sort of say, all right, hurricanes are good because they do things for the environment. They're, you know, it's Mother Nature doing its thing, you know, moving sand around or whatever happens with a storm, you know, reseeding trees, you know, and fires. And but I feel like if we're going to change it, it could really have some consequences we don't even know about. Just speculating. So, okay.
Yeah, again, we're not in the business of weather modification. We're in the business of natural catastrophe.
Yeah, right. And hopefully that business stays around a while. Okay, just a couple of quick ones for you. Ready? A couple of quick questions. Okay, what's a myth about the insurance industry that drives you crazy?
I think that, well, I would say that there's two. Number one is that, again, as a scientist, you can't make a career in the insurance industry. It's probably definitely not within the top 5 or 10 careers that people think of when they decide to study meteorology. Mm-hmm. You know, they think like, oh, I want to be on TV. I want to work for the National Weather Service. I want to work for the National Hurricane Center. But everything is affected by the weather. So there's a range of ways to make your career. There is a range of careers you can have if you study meteorology, and insurance is definitely one.
Okay.
And it's definitely, I think the other misperception is that it's not an exciting career. You know, I feel like there's probably these like old school, like 1980s and 90s stereotypes of the insurance salesman from, I don't know, like sitcoms or something like that. And that's what everybody envisions when you think about insurance, but it's actually a really exciting and interesting way to make your career. And it's really, it can be, it's intellectually satisfying. It's intellectually challenging. You can be curious. You can learn about a lot of different things. I mean, Swiss Re is a huge company, and there's so many different lines of business that Swiss Re works on, and there's so many different avenues that you could explore if you get your foot in the door at a large insurer or reinsurer. And it's also at Swiss Re, our mission statement is we make the world more resilient. So there really is we're the ones that you turn to in the aftermath of a natural disaster.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So if you weren't in insurance, where would you be?
I've been here for so long that I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
Maybe because I like teaching, maybe I ultimately would have gone and been a high school physics teacher or environmental science teacher and focused on that.
Yeah.
Maybe I would have wound up more again on the financial side doing weather derivatives.
Mm-hmm.
But now I've been doing this, and I've been in this industry for so long that I don't really know what I'd be doing otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. Teaching where you wouldn't have to do all that research and travel around, right? That's a local high school certainly would be an option, or maybe Rutgers University. That's
maybe.
Yeah.
Although that is a large research institution.
Yeah. So I assume over the year, especially since you did all your schooling, and teachers at heart they have to be leaders too. So what are some things about leadership you've learned over the years?
I feel like I have learned a lot, but I would definitely say that, you know, some of the things that I've learned is that I think that true leaders succeed by lifting up others around them, and by working in a collaborative way, and by looking to identify and empower either their team members or their colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's really collectively that you're going to be most successful.
Mm-hmm. That's good. I think, you know, there's various kinds of people I've run into in the C-suite, and the ones who follow that, you know, that kind of rhymes with what you're saying, are to me the most interesting people to work with and for. You know, maybe it's just me, but the collaboration, lifting others up, is a really good quality. Doesn't mean you can't be a brilliant CEO. It's just that collectively you're better. And think about what insurance is all about. It's, you know, used to be underwriters living in a cubicle just pounding away. And now the best companies have collaboration on things using technology. So that's good. So along the way, Megan, did you have any failures that turned out to be the best thing that ever happened to you?
I can't necessarily think of anything that I would, well, I can't necessarily think of anything that would qualify as a failure, because I feel like you learn from everything, right? Mm-hmm. Even the mistakes. But I think one of the best things that ever happened to me in my professional career was my colleague who was senior to me when I joined Swiss Re, in the team that I joined Swiss Re in, and was kind of like my mentor, my buddy. He was the one who was really teaching me the ropes. Mm-hmm. When I was probably just a little over a year in, and again, I had no background in business. I had taken a few economics courses in college, but I was a scientist through and through. My minor was math. So no business background, no economics background, no sales background, nothing like that. Probably about 15 months into me joining Swiss Re, he took another job internally. And I was kind of left to navigate what he and I were doing on my own. And that turned out to be a really good experience because A, it forced me to learn quickly, and B, it forced me to be the one to make the decisions on things, to make the recommendations on things, to act as the sounding board with underwriters, to be the one explaining why our models work the way they did, to be the one steering them into understanding why the numbers were what they were. And I think that being kind of thrown into that situation a little earlier than I was expected really empowered me and taught me, it's like, okay, to not be right 100% of the time. you know, if I was wrong, I would just go back to them and correct myself. And B, to, again, be the one to take the lead and make the decision and have essentially in some instances like the final word.
Mm-hmm.
And then stand by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unlike those brokers out there, are not always right, but they're always confident, right? okay, last one for you. What advice would you give your younger self?
What advice would I give my younger self?
Yeah. Megan's in high school, Megan's in college, Megan's in grad school, and you're talking to her.
God, this is a tough one. I'm really trying to think what advice I would give my younger self. I have no idea.
People are all over the map with their answers, but you're the first one who's been stumped by it.
It's
not a bad thing that you.
Yeah, I really.
Some people have said I should have relaxed more. I was too worried, too motivated, you know. It's like,
now, you know, one of the many things that I have to give Swiss Re credit for is we've always had a really good work-life balance ever since mm-hmm. I've been working. I mean, obviously working in 2026 is different than working in 2008 because mm-hmm. you know, COVID and technology has enabled a much more flexible physical working location, but you know, I've been lucky where Swiss Re has always promoted a good work-life balance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a good way to keep good people, you know.
Most definitely. I feel like a lot of people stay at Swiss Re for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't actually know the advice that I would give to my younger self.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad I never finally, since we've been doing this since 2009, we have no advice for the younger self. Because your younger self is your...
I think just know that everything's going to turn out okay and you'll get where you need to be.
There you go. Yeah. All right. Here's one I know you know the answer to. What's your favorite restaurant in New Jersey?
Oh, my favorite restaurant.
Do you like Italian?
Are we talking seafood? Are we talking Italian?
We're talking Italian. Let's talk Italian.
Are we talking pizza?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Bagels, so, pizza, everything.
I mean, bagels. Bagels here would be Bagelicious by me in Ridgewood. And then bacon bagels in Lavalette would be the two. Go-to bagel shops.
Okay.
And then, I mean, for seafood, the Crab's Claw in Lavalette, Runners in Lavalette.
Nice.
We spend a lot of time in Cape May, so
I love
Fish
Cape
Market.
May. Oh yeah, been there too.
Yeah, big fan of Cape May Fish Market. Big fan of Taco Cabalito in Cape May.
Okay, that's good.
And then when it comes to Italian, I mean, we have a great pizza place up here, Village Pizza in Allendale, which is like our go-to pizza place. And then, oh my God, our go-to pasta place is a place called Santoni's if we're going to order takeout.
Santoni's, nice.
Yeah.
Nice. I miss the Jersey food so much, I can't even tell you.
I know. We have really great food here.
Excellent.
And I don't think people realize how easy it is to go from urban to rural.
Mm-hmm.
And like you can find like some great local produce, some great local meat, some great local eggs and cheese, because it's really just a very short distance that New Jersey goes from densely populated and urbanized to farmland.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Even the Pine Barrens, they have berry pies, you know. It's really amazing, especially the Southwest, and the Northeast parts of, the Northwest and the Southeast parts of Jersey, because that's the part where people are not traveling between Philly and New York. You know, that's kind of a gross part of the state, but I digress. Anyway,
definitely two quieter parts.
Yeah. I do miss it a lot. My family's all up there still. So, okay, Megan, well, thank you. Good luck with everything you're doing. And here's to a mild season for hurricanes anyway, for us here in Florida. The rest of the country, man, where is it safe? Nowhere is safe.
Well, I mean, my fingers are crossed that you have a quiet hurricane season, but even though I know that some of the early forecasts have come out saying that the El Nino that's forming could lead to a fewer number of storms forming in the Atlantic, but I always like to leave everybody with the reminder that it only takes one to make a season memorable. Hurricane Andrew happened in late August of 1992, the first storm, and that was during an El Nino year, and it was certainly one to remember.
Yeah.
So now is the time of year for those in hurricane prone states to make sure that they are prepared and ready for whatever the Atlantic Ocean may throw at us.
Yeah. The Gulf is so hot in the summer.
And the Gulf as well. Yes.
It's hot. Before I go, I got to tell you, maybe this is familiar to you, but during the Ice Age, apparently, Tampa Bay was a freshwater lake, and it was in the middle of Florida. And Florida was as wide west as it is to the east from that lake, if you will. So Tampa Bay. I think that's so fascinating. But it takes, if you're a fisherman, it takes a while to get out to deep water because it's so shallow in the Gulf. And that's why we have these surges of water. That's what Hurricane Helene was. It wasn't the wind. It was the water surge.
Yeah, Hurricane Helene passed fairly far offshore.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. All right, my friend, thank you so much for your time.
All right, thank you, Peter. It was nice talking to you.
Same here.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Artrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.